accession number 19390, Reel 1.
Eddie Jeffries, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Wigan, 2nd of October 1914.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Wigan?
Yes.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
So that would have been in 1928?
Yes.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I did.
Doing what?
Well, at a clothing factory.
And were you doing that when war was declared?
I was at Taylor's Cutapai then.
Had you joined the Territorial Army before the war?
No, the Home Guard.
What, you joined the Home Guard Home once Guard. The war started?
Once it had started, yes.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did.
Under what circumstances?
Well, I was sat with my intended wife at that time in the lounge.
How did you feel about the news that we were at war again?
Don't doubt it.
Had you expected it?
Yes.
So, how did the war affect you at first?
Well, the war, we were both married in March 1940, and I was called up on October 17th, 1940. And then I never saw my wife 1 week until I came back in 1946.
Before you were called up, had you been in any bombing by the German Air Force?
Only slight bombing. Very little, because we lived in between Wigan and Liverpool. And there was just one or two... I think they dropped the bombs that they hadn't dropped in Liverpool.
What was your address in those days?
17 Chapel Street, Lower Ince.
Lower?
Ince, Lower Ince.
So was any damage done by these bombs at Lower Ince?
Nothing at all, no.
How did you feel about being called up?
Well, it had to come and... See, I was in a reserved occupation, but they did eventually call me up.
Had you received much training in the Home Guard?
Very little, very little. I mean, we had no rifles or anything like that. We were just brooms and one thing or another, one or two rifles.
Was it called the Lower Ince Home Guard?
No, I think it was Brinlow Guard because I was married by then.
So what was the Home Guard used for in your area?
Well, I was at the top of a steeple in the church for quite a number of nights.
Doing what?
Look out for aircraft, I think. Never saw any.
By yourself?
No, there was two of us.
Can you tell me what happened once you got called up?
Yes, I left Wigan Station to Carlisle. Went to Carlisle, and as we got off the train, the truck there waiting to take us to the race course at Carlisle. And then we did a bit of training there, and then we went in to the castle at Carlisle. They'd asked for volunteers for transport, mortars and signals. So I preferred the signals and went in the signals.
Why did you prefer the signals?
Because my brother-in-law was in the 1st Division. He was killed in the war. And then, from there, after I'd finished my training, passed, we went over to Lowick in Northumberland.
What was the basic training like for you?
Well, it was mostly learning the Morse code and doing the Morse code and transmitting and receiving and all that.
Did you have any problems with it?
None whatever.
What did you do in Northumberland?
Plenty of training. We was at that time attached to the 55th Island Division. Lot of training, patrolling the seashore. Then there was one time there were a big scare on, they were bombing all very much. And the complete division went down to war for about a fortnight. They expected invasion then. Anyway, nothing came of it, and we came back to Low Lynn, a place called Low Lynn near Aggerston Castle.
Do you remember whereabouts in Hull you went to?
Yes, what was it now? Hornsey, that's it, that's the place, yes.
That's a village on the coast.
That's right, yes.
Did you think the Germans would invade?
Well, you don't think of these things, you just wait and see. But the bombing that all got, it was terrific. You know, but anyway, it never came.
Can you give any details about the bombing of Hull?
Well, it was outside the station and all that was demolished and that. And of course, we came straight through and took up our positions on the front.
How did public morale seem to be standing up to the bombing in Hull?
Well, we had no contact at all with the public. None whatever.
And when you were at Hornsey, what kind of defences were there in case of invasion?
Well, I mean, just a normal dugout and that.
What kind of a show do you think you would have put up if the Germans had invaded?
Poor. In number.
Poor?
In number, yes, yes.
Why do you think?
Well, it was a narrow peninsula, isn't it, Hornsey? So they would have to come over there and then come into Hull. So the majority of the troops were in and around Hull. But some of us say we never saw anything, nothing. And then we withdrew back to Aggerston Castle.
What happened there?
Well, that was our depot. And we kept moving from village to village there, to Berwick-on-Tweed and Barmo, where Barmo Castle is. And then we moved to Washington. And I came home on leave. And when I got back, there was nobody there. Just a few. I said, where is everybody? Said, oh, they've gone on disembarkation leave. And then they all came back. And then in August 17th, we sailed from Glasgow. From there, we went to Sierra Leone.
Is this 41?
No, 40. 41, wait a moment, 41, 42. Yeah, 42 it was. Then we went on to Durban. We had about 3 weeks in Durban. And then from there, we went to Bombay. And then from Bombay, we went into Calcutta.
What was the voyage like to the east?
To South Africa. Well, it was just one or two scares, that's all. I mean, we was well catered for as far as battleships, and that was there. With the Rodney and the Hampshire. On oceans of little, destroyers, yes.
What were conditions like in the ship?
Very good. Very good, yes.
And so you'd been with which battalion right from the beginning?
Ninth.
Ninth Border.
Ninth Border, right through.
And which company were you in?
HQ Company, Signals.
Did you stop off in South Africa?
Yes, at Durban. We had about 3 weeks there, because I understand that they were undecided whether we should go to Alexandra or India. Anyway, it proved to be in India. Bombay.
What were your first impressions of India at Bombay?
Well, my first impressions were that, you see, we got off the boat, onto the train, and then I think it was about a week travelling to Calcutta. But it was a dirty place then, but they tell me that it's improved a lot. And then in Calcutta we did internal security.
What did that involve?
Escorting Rajas and that to wherever they wanted to go to, and going guarding ships in the Hooghly, you know, that had just arrived at night.
Were you doing this as well, or was that just the riflemen?
Oh no, we were doing this as well.
Was there much of an internal security problem in Calcutta?
No, no, whatever, no.
Did you ever come across any disturbances there at all?
No, no. No, and then from there I went to, they sent me to HQ headquarters at Bharatpur on courier service, and I used to go, me and a sergeant and an American, and we used to go to Shillong, just outside Shillong, with messages, about twice a week.
How did you travel from Bharatpur to Shillong?
Well, as you got out of the office, there was a jeep there waiting with two red caps. They would escort you to the train. They would hand you over to two further red caps at the station. They would take you to your compartment on the train. And you'd met the Americans. And every meal time, they used to stop the train and bring your meal to you, but never allowed to get out of the train. And you only had to deliver the message to the person that it was addressed to.
What was the message? A document?
Oh yes, it was from from headquarters. And then from there, the battalion was going into Burma, and they recalled my bike, so I had to go and rejoin the battalion. And then we went to Shillong.
Before you go on, did any incidents happen to you whilst you were doing the
career work? No, no, nothing at all. No, nothing at all. And then from they went into Shillong for a bit more training and inoculations and that. And then we went to Bharatpur. That's just outside Coimbatore. That's the last railway station in India.
Bharatpur?
Dimapur. And from there we started off on our journey into Burma. And we crossed the Indo-Burmese road on the 11th of November 1943.
So this was obviously the anniversary of Armistice Day.
Yes. And from there we went to what the place called 109. just goes by the name 109, which is a big depot. And then after that, we went to, we got on trucks again.
What did Depot 109 consist of?
Well, it was a depot for munitions and all that. You know, and reinforcements and what have you. General purpose, yeah. Then after that, we marched up the road to Tidham, and from Tidham we marched up to Tennedy Peak.
What was the march like?
Terrible. Terrible.
What was the main problem on the march?
Well, the heat and that in the broad daylight, you know. Anyway, eventually we landed.
Did you march through the whole of the day?
Yes, the whole of the day. And we just rested up at the night, and then we marched on to Tidham, to Kennedy Peak, which is supposed to be, I read it in a book this week, that it's 9,000 feet high. Every time you wanted to drink the water, you had to go to the bottom.
Were men falling out on the march to Kennedy Peak?
No, never saw one. No, never saw one. And we was there from November till March, doing skirmishes and patrols, quite a lot of patrols. We were practically every other day patrolling.
Did you have to go out yourself?
Oh, I did, yes.
Even though you're a signalman?
Yes, well, you had to go out with a set to... there was one incident we went, and we went out and we had to blow this 5.5 gun up. And Captain Etherington was the patrol officer. And we was dying for a drink of water, you know, it was about 3 or 4 days without. And anyway, one of the lads went down and filled the chaddle full of water, and we all had a drink. So we started off then on, along the track on what they call the Ona Ridge. And we stopped on, I don't know what, we were eating nuts and raisins and that. And Captain Etherington said to me, he says, we could hear voices in the distance. And he says, the Gurkhas are there. So he said, we'll be having a drink of tea shortly, or else that's be in heaven. So we started off marching again. He was in heaven. Shot. He got shot. And I stopped another look round and see if I could see anything. But I got my Sten gun ready. When I looked round, they'd all gone down the mountain side. So I goes down the mountain side to follow them, and we were marching on. Oh, when I got down to bottom on the radio, I sent a message to Battalion HQ that Captain Nether, A Company number 9 had been killed, you see. A Company number 9 was the CO. A Company number 9 killed in action. And then onwards we made our way back to Battalion.
Who'd shot him?
The Japs.
Just one shot?
Just one shot there was. Just one shot. I thought that they'd come after them. Because I was surprised that they withdrew, because there was quite a number of us there on the patrol, because we joined up with another patrol that should have blown a bridge up. And I think they were unsuccessful as well.
But could you guess where the sniper was who'd hit her?
No. I mean, they were in trees, in the hollows of trees. And anyway, we gets up and becomes these Nagas, tribemen. And they took us. And you've seen the waterfall a waterfall, and you walk behind it, and there's a cave there. Well, there was this cave there. And I said, we want to be careful here, be ready. Well, you don't know whether you're going into a trap or not. Because that's the way they work, you know, you're cute. Anyway, they were all right. And
so it was the Nagas who led you to this cave?
Pardon?
Was it the Nagas who led you to
yes,
the cave?
Yes, yes, yes. And the following day we started off, and then we reached the top of Canada Peak. And they were all, everybody was waiting for us to go over and dished out the mail. And I was told I could have 24 hours off. Could have been out a fortnight. And very little to eat. But in the meantime, there was another patrol going out, and they were short of signallers, so they came for me again. So I had to go back to a place called Fort White. And was there about 3 days. That's Fort White, that was where the Japanese... See, there was two peaks, Kennedy Peak and Fort White. And they were shelling each other, you know, but we could never move it. With big transport planes came over with bombs and big, very large bombs, but they couldn't move them. They tunneled underneath. And that went on for, patrol went on for quite a while, up and down. And then eventually, in March 1944, we were told to withdraw, and then we withdrew. And it was fight, fight, fight all the way back to to 109. It took us about a fortnight. And we found some of the Jap supplies and tins of carnation milk, you know, well, Fuzos. We all started drinking this carnation milk. Well, it made us worse. And then we started off the following day, and then...
What effect did the milk have on you?
Well, it made us thirsty still. And following day, we met up with 2nd Division. They'd broken through. Not 2nd Division. 7th Division, and he put tins of water alongside the road for us.
Who did?
Well, his name was Geoffrey Ashton, and he owned a big tobacco shop in Wigan. And the reason I know that, my mother had a grocer's shop, and she got a cigarette from them, and he told her that I was in the 17th Division, and he said, well, God Almighty's own, they were, which they were called of God Almighty's own, you know, the 17th Indian Division. And then, of course, it was battle after battle, breaking roadblocks and doing this until we got into Imphal, and then you got... because we never had our clothes off for weeks, and they made us take everything off and put them on the fire, our clothing. Walk through these tents, which you had a bath, and then issued you clean clothes. They were absolutely full of lice. And then...
Did the lice trouble you very much?
Not very much, no. But when you see that they were on you, you did the thoughts of it.
But did you suffer from the bites?
No, no, no. And then from then, it was patrolling round Imphal, and then went to Coima, broke the roadblock there.
What did that involve?
Well, I think it was about 2 companies that went in. And see, he was always attached to a company. Signals. You're always attached to one company. Three signalers there were. Well, I was Lance Corporal. And from there, the roadblock was eventually broken. And then they tried to get a tank up. You know about the tank, do you, that's halfway up?
No, tell me, please.
Oh, yeah, well, they got this tank up. The Japanese, Koima, there was tennis courts there, and they were made of solid cement. And nothing could touch them, mortars and nothing. So they decided to get this tank up. Anyway, it was so steep and sheer that they couldn't get it up. It wouldn't go up on its own power. So they got this big American truck, took an hawser up, and then brought it round a big teak tree, brought it, and then pulled the tank up.
Did you see this yourself?
No, I didn't, no. And then they found out that when they got it up, they couldn't get the barrel down far enough to fire at the tennis courts. And it's still there. And the British 2nd Division wanted to bring it out, but one of the reunions, there was the Naga chief was there. And he said, in no way. They're going better. Never had a coat of paint on since 1944. And then from then we went back into Imphal when the 2nd Division moved in. And went round the rear of them, the rear of Koima, and they pushed us, they pushed them onto us. And then after that, after they'd broken it, we were evacuated to Ranchi as convalescents.
What condition were you in by the end?
Bad. Bad condition. I mean, they used to give milk every morning, a cup of milk every morning, old chickens, only small chickens, for dinner at night. They fed you well. And then they weren't satisfied with that. RSM came to me and said, Corporal Jeffers, I've got a job for you. Oh, I says, what's that? He said, well, I want you to go for a special goods night. And it's near Bombay. So I gets this, had another chap with me. And we went on this, and oh, it was a terrible journey, train after train. And eventually we land there. And I go to this chap here when I get to the depot, a Sikh he was. I said, oh, I said, I've come for a mortar site. Oh, he says, it's here. Oh, I says, I'll pick it up in the morning. Because he never had a proper sleep. I'll pick it up in the morning. Oh, he says, you take it now. And we had to go back to the station with this gun sight. Sit in the station until the train came and then started on our way back again. But luckily enough, on the train, there was three officers got on. And they were asking us how where we were going. And I said, oh, well, we're going to Ranchi. Oh, I said, we are too. He said, what are you doing? I said, well, we've got a gun mortar